The Democrats create a road plan. Where will it lead? A super PAC for Eric Holcomb. Can Bill Osterly make a difference in the Senate race? That plus the latest Hoosier survey results regarding gun control and needle exchanges. Amos Brown remembered IKEA is coming and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending November 13, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Democrats in the Indiana House of Representatives presented a new plan for road funding. It's meant to be an alternative to the governor's plan. Minority Leader Scott Pelath proposed dedicating the money from the state sales tax on gasoline to a combination of state and local transportation spending. It would amount to $2 billion in spending over a four-year period. Currently, that money goes into the state general fund.
We need to begin the era where everything you pay at the pump that goes to the state of Indiana goes back to paying to fix, maintain, or create a road or a bridge here in this state.
Is that plan workable? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Robert Bain, John Schwantes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Robert Bain, in your role as spokesman for the governor, you called that plan irresponsible. Why?
It doesn't pay for itself. I mean, $500 million a year out of the general fund times four. Now, I went to IPS, but I figure out that's $2 billion. Plus, not a single person in that announcement, as far as I saw, please correct me, who could have voted for major moves, Mitch Daniels' program, did. So their credibility is shot from the beginning. NDOT says next year will be their busiest year ever, $1.7 billion construction in place. The person who's absent from the discussion is their putative governor candidate, John Gregg. He hasn't commented on it that I've seen. Maybe I missed it. Like a lot of issues, he's kind of just doing a Howard Hughes routine. No one's heard from him. Does he like this plan or does he not like this plan?
I think he's still in the fundraising stage.
Yeah. For what is he going. Tweets out every time he orders breakfast. He can't have it both ways.
But this plan would reduce the state surplus.
Yeah. I mean, the answer is not, obviously, what the Republicans used to chant ad nauseum, the state is not a bank. The state is not a bank. You know, Mike Pence's answer to everything is we have a surplus. You have children dying because DCS isn't properly funded. We have a surplus. You're ruining your car and your tires and your wheels on the roads. We have a surplus. Bridges are collapsing. We have a surplus. We're underfunding K through 12 education. We have a surplus. His idea is the usual thing, small bore. The only big idea he's had in 3 years is expanding Obamacare. That's the only thing that he has done that has had an impact on this state.
Well, but this plan didn't go over very well with the State House press corps.
Oh, no. Well, my gosh. Just shoot Scott Pelath in the head if the state press corps didn't like it.
Well, but these are folks who watch the budgeting process, and it would appear that it's an effort to spend down the surplus as much as it is an effort to build roads.
Well, I won't dispute that because the money that otherwise would have gone into the general fund has to be accounted for somewhere, and it's likely that it would reduce the state surplus at the end of the year. Look, what this does is it takes away the governor's argument that there is no plan. So now they've at least advanced a plan. You heard what Robert thinks of it, and understandably, it's much different than the plan that the governor and other Republicans have had. But you have to set parameters here, and you have to, you know, if they want to be credible in this, then they have to offer a plan. You don't have to like it, but it's a good idea to listen to it and then see where it goes from there. Now, I think another thing that is worth considering here is when we get right down to it, they're going to have to do something because, there is a lot of pressure for roads at this point to get additional funding.
You don't have to be a genius to realize that both parties have done polling and they're told that infrastructure is a concern.
You just have to look at the bridges collapsing and infrastructure is a concern.
It is a huge issue, absolutely. And it's something that people can relate to. As we've discussed before, there are some issues that state government is involved in that it's sort of theoretical to a lot of people. That's somebody else's issue. This is pretty much everybody's issue because you're feeling the bumps and the grinds and the detours and having to replace the hubcaps over those potholes.
But so there's billions of dollars of construction going on, and it's been going on.
Yeah,
and
more has been proposed. Tell me this. As a philosophical matter, there is some genius in here, I think, when you say that every time you buy a gallon of gas, you pay a portion of state sales tax, and therefore that should go to the roads. I mean, you can refigure the budget, but this
philosophically would make more sense if cars weren't getting better gas mileage than they used to. Mike Pence and Republicans' fiscal sanity and fiscal priority have created the pot of money that the Democrats want to spend down. And when they had a chance to vote on the jobs and roads program of a century, major moves, they didn't.
It's obviously not of a century since our road structure is crumbling around us. But on top of that, when you're talking about fiscal irresponsibility, part of the governor's program, well, two things. First of all, it gives nothing to locals. 90% of the roads and streets are local, and it gives zero to them,
Although he says he'll look for roads.
That's right.
We're going to shake the cushions of the couch for that.
This is 47% to locals, 53% to the
state.
That's
right. But the other problem with it, too, is that he's bonding. And he's bonding not for construction. He's bonding for maintenance. And when you talk about fiscal irresponsibility, that is the height
of fiscal
irresponsibility.
He proposed a 20-year bond. Governor Evan Bayh did a 40-year bond.
Not
Which
for
one is more responsible?
Not for maintenance.
Like Robert, I went to IPS, at least K through 8, so I know where you're coming from. Good education, actually. But the math, as I see it, is such that neither of these plans in reality is the long-term fix. You look at the scope of the problem that's built up over decades.
They're both election year reactions.
They both are. Yes. And you know what the sad reality, I mean, it's not sad, I guess it's just the reality is, there will have to be, and I hate,
a revenue enhancement.
It's called a tax increase.
Yeah.
There will have to be a tax increase to get the roads and bridges in this state. And again, it's not an Indiana problem. This is a national problem. And until people embrace that and realize that, you're not going to get anywhere.
Well, you won't get it for the governor.
Because these are both very much, go either route. They're both short-term solutions.
Yeah, John. That's because next year is going to be when the real action has to happen. And that is when we hopefully have a long-term look. And it doesn't include just roads, but all modes of transportation.
Has to include all modes of transportation. Because everybody we take off the highway reduces the workload for those highways.
We are fortunate in that Ed Soliday, who is the from Valparaiso, the state rep who chairs roads and transportation, is a very smart person and does take the long perspective on this. And I think he's not enthusiastic about either plan.
Like,
but he also
there's no
sees
Republican
that there's
support
solutions.
For the governor's
so
program.
He, I think, will take a rational look at this and see where it gets us.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, does it make sense to spend part of the state surplus on roads? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, how many terms will Joe Hogsett serve as mayor of Indianapolis? 20% said one, 56% said two, 24% said three or more. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Bill Osterly, the former CEO of Angie's List, is launching a super PAC to help out Eric Holcomb. The PAC, called Frugal Hoosiers, will raise money for ads for Holcomb, who is trailing Todd Young and and Marlon Stutzman in fundraising. Frugal Hoosiers was also the name of a group that recruited Mitch Daniels to run for governor. Both Osterly and Holcomb were involved in that effort, and Delaney. Can that pack be a difference maker in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate?
I think it's possible. I mean, certainly Holcomb needs help. He's not raising the money he needs to raise, and if Bill Osterly can raise it for him, he can appeal to that very, very, very narrow group of moderate Republicans out there. But if he does, the interesting thing from that is he could pull votes from Todd Young, and Marlon Stutzman could be the nominee. And if that happens, it's what God intended.
Well, what's interesting is when Osterly announced this, he staked out a bunch of moderate positions that he says he's after that Holcomb doesn't necessarily embrace.
Well, it's no surprise they're working together. One's supporting the other. They've been friends for years, worked together for years for the Daniels effort. Successfully, as it turned out, as Mitch Daniels won twice, the second time in a thumping. But Eric Holcomb has a lot of friends, and he has a great grassroots effort. Clearly, Todd Young is the 800-pound gorilla when it comes to fundraising, and the numbers show that. I don't know Congressman Stutzman as well. He certainly has a coalition who is supporting him. Holcomb does need, you can't deny that Holcomb needs that help, and Osterly's not a bad wingman if that's what you're looking for.
If you're Holcomb, would you rather get contributions to your campaign, or would you rather have a super PAC helping you out?
As long as the check's clear, I don't think it probably matters. I mean, if you look at a super PAC, I guess, and as a practical matter, there can't be a great deal of collaboration officially. It's not.
This is federal. Yeah, you're right.
So it's not as if they can that. Again, in theory, wink, wink, nod, nod, the candidate and the campaign can't orchestrate or specify, I believe, if my understanding is correct, how those dollars are spent. Whereas, obviously, Jim, with straight contributions, political campaign contributions, you could do whatever you want with it. Having said that, he wasn't exactly, shaking the money tree in terms of contributions, so I'm sure that this is welcome money indeed.
And your question, just for one second, that's where Republicans have kind of weighed in and said Holcomb would much rather, they believe Holcomb would rather have that money direct to the campaign as to the other side.
Well, but if it's not coming, there's not an option.
Money's better than no money, right?
Yeah. Will it make a difference?
I think the potential is definitely there to make a difference, and the news this week was that Angie's List may get acquired for a pretty good premium, and I think Osterly's still got some stock, so he might have some extra money to funnel into the super PAC as well.
There's a couple million in that. It could be a game changer.
Actually, it could be.
Yeah.
But to Eric's credit, he's running a different kind of campaign that's not out there needing the millions of dollars. He's running a different kind of grassroots campaign.
He's running a grassroots campaign because he doesn't have the money.
The people who are fired up about Barron Hill. There's one of them.
Moving on. There is widespread support for some gun control measures in Indiana. That's one of the findings in the Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey. It found 83% in favor of background checks at gun sales, 16% are opposed, and 83% also want to prevent people with mental illness from buying guns. 51% are in favor of a ban on assault weapons. John Ketzenberger, is that a surprise?
No, it's not a surprise. I mean, it mirrors a lot of the national sentiment for those very common sense issues. But don't expect anything to change in the state of Indiana because, the gun lobbies had a very successful track record here. And the answer to the gun lobby to any kind of changes that it would see as detrimental has always been no. And even if it is softening on the national stage, I don't see it changing in Indiana anytime soon.
Well, I think we always talk about how institutions move more slowly than the public. The General Assembly with Republican supermajorities is not likely to embrace gun control measures anytime soon. But it's still interesting to see that the public's in favor of them.
Oh, I think it's interesting. And the numbers, as you spelled them out, Jim, in the survey, are more lopsided than perhaps we might have imagined in a state like Indiana. But you're right, John's right. This is not going to affect change anytime soon. And part of that, I think, is that just because X number, 6 out of 10, 8 out of 10 believe a certain way, you've got to factor in how adamant individuals are. And I think even though this may be changing too, the people who are very concerned about any encroachment on what they perceive as their Second Amendment rights, in terms of buying and carrying arms, they are much more strident or much more passionate and likely to vote with their wallets
and likely to look up my email address and dispute the
as opposed to opposed to those just many people who favor gun control.
I think that's changing too with the mass killings that have gone on a weekly basis around this country. A lot of people are fed up and saying that their rights are being endangered here. And I know that the Republican Party and Mike Pence is under the thumb of the NRA. That's clear. I mean, when you have Mike Pence proposing carrying guns onto school property and cutting the budget for school safety until he got caught, you know, those kinds of things show how much they're under the thumb of the NRA. But
I don't know that Mike Pence was pursuing that, although it was in the legislature. And what's interesting to me is what we've seen in the Indiana General Assembly in recent years are attempts to put more guns in the hands of people
of
in
law-abiding
schools
citizens,
and elsewhere.
And that's exactly how it should be. And just this week, Mike Pence, a lot of
guns.
The money for the school safety were one-time costs. This week, an additional $10 million.
No.
And as much as the Democrats love to beat up on the Republicans in the NRA, one fact is inescapable. In 2009 and 2010, they had the presidency, the United States Senate, and the United States House of Representatives. And what do they do about guns? Nothing.
All right, tell me this. We don't have any previous Indiana numbers to compare these to, but do you think gun attitudes are changing?
I think people feel more scared and they're more likely to want a gun. Absolutely, and they should have it. Law-abiding people should have it.
Are they also more likely to want gun control measures that affect others?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't dispute what your poll said. I haven't done my own poll. I know
that
people have a right to carry arms and they should exercise that right if they want to.
No person can argue that people with mental health issues and background checks are a must. No rational person can make that compelling argument.
All right, still with the Hoosier survey, 7 Indiana counties now have needle exchanges aimed at fighting an HIV epidemic tied to intravenous drug use. The Hoosier survey, meantime, found public support for taking the program statewide. 69% favored that approach, while just 25% are opposed.
We find that there's great support for a needle exchange program. Of course, we've had some problems in southern Indiana with that, and that certainly increases awareness.
In Madison County, addicts who turn in needles are also offered counseling.
We feel like that the program wouldn't be complete if we didn't have those additional resources.
And our poll also found that Hoosiers would prefer expanding alternatives to incarceration for drug addicts.
That we don't need to just throw a person in jail and throw away the key. Rather, what we have to do is more treatment.
Just 26% favor the idea of prosecuting drug users, 63% favor treatment, and 7% believe both options should be pursued equally. John Schwanis, what's most interesting about those numbers?
You must have something in mind, Jim. I feel like it's a pop quiz, and I may not pass if I don't get the right answer.
I think it's incarceration.
This is a problem that's statewide. And you look at the counties, for instance, that now have needle exchanges or are moving toward them. Yeah. It's no longer just, it used to be everybody was focusing on a pocket in southern Indiana. It ain't that anymore. This is a broader issue.
Seven counties have needle exchanges. 22 22 are at least moving that
direction. Why it should have been statewide in the beginning?
And I believe, if I understood the data from the poll correctly, this issue really doesn't know socioeconomic boundaries. I mean, it seemed to cut across both parties, rich, poor, somewhere in the middle.
Well, almost geography. Everybody has somebody.
And I think
family.
That's telling, because I think there was a tendency maybe early in this issue, in this problem, in the scourge, to say, it's, again, somebody else's problem geographically or socioeconomically. And it's not that. And it's probably wise, and it's a healthy thing that people recognize that it's something that needs to be combated broadly.
You talk to cops, I'd see them at the gym or see them at the wherever, and they'll say the fact that we're the crossroads of America works both ways. it's easier to get the good stuff in the state and around the state. It's also easier to get the bad state.
So
the
we
bad
shouldn't fix it around
the state. Which is why it should have been.
Said it works both
it
ways.
It should have been a statewide program to begin with. But, you know, again, the small bore approach by the governor wants to have somebody else take responsibility for implementing it. But we have a problem. We have a problem
giving
government-paid
needles to drug addicts isn't a slam dunk, let's celebrate Thanksgiving.
Oh, I see. So we let them get HIV instead and we pay for that. That's a brilliant fiscally responsible, morally responsible thing.
That's not something that
that's
you just automatically do.
It's the same argument you made about inoculating teenage girls. Because, you know, if they have sex, well, maybe they
shouldn't. I mentioned teenage girls on this show.
Let's give John a try. Let's give John a try.
He doesn't want it.
Oh, I think he does. I think
sure,
he does.
Why not?
Sure. The public, obviously, is in favor of this. Will the General Assembly be more open to this?
To a statewide solution as opposed to what they have now? I think they're going to see that this. They think that this is working. They see that the process is in place, that people are applying, they're getting permission to do this, and it's happening. I don't see them making it a statewide. Now, they may try to take some other approaches to try to enhance assistance to the counties, because it has become and is a major problem, and we're aware of that now. And so if there's additional resources that can be sent to the counties, because it is cheaper to do it on the front end, Robert, than it is to treat the illness afterwards.
And I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying that the governor did the right thing, but the idea that this was a slam dunk, no one else disagreed with this, and everyone should do this, is something that needed to be reviewed, and he did it, and they did the right thing.
We know the Tea Party didn't agree with it, and that's why he waited 65 days and did a half-assed solution.
Is he going to be more open to expanding this?
I don't know, but what he has done is working, and that's what's important.
All right. This year's Sachem Award will go posthumously to Indianapolis radio icon Amos Brown. Governor Mike Pence made that announcement this week after Brown died suddenly. At the Radio 1 studio, where Brown produced a daily show called Afternoons with Amos, co-workers shared what it was like working with him as they passed around a tissue box. Brown was an advocate for minorities and the disadvantaged. He was also active in the community, raising money for charities, including the Moselle Sanders Thanksgiving Dinner. He died from a heart attack at the age of 64 while visiting his father in Chicago. Co-worker Donna Sheely.
It didn't matter what the situation was. If somebody was complaining about potholes, he wanted to get an answer for them. And he wanted us to find a way to help them. So it was all about him helping. He was such a servant for this city, and I don't think people really understood that. Mm-hmm. But he, just to see his heart, I mean, he wanted to help.
Robert Vane, why was Amos chosen for this Sachem?
Speaking of Mike Pence doing the right thing, he did the right thing here. Amos Brown's been a tireless advocate for numerous causes, the disadvantaged minorities, for decades. He was a member of the Broadcasting Hall of Fame. I had a terrific relationship with him, just talked to him for an hour the week before he died. We fight sometimes, we laugh a lot of times. He'll truly be missed. I'm still just in complete shock.
Well, Amos has been on this panel. We all knew him well. He held kind of a special place in the community.
Right, and I think that it's good that the governor honored him in death. I wish he'd paid more attention to him while he was alive.
Oy, my
then
stars.
He could do something, it seems to me, for the community. That's something Amos would have liked.
Amos was a big fan of Mike Pence,
Well, he can't dispute that at the moment, can
Absolutely
he?
Absolutely a big fan.
John, how will you remember Amos?
Well, I'll tell you what. He had a column in the Indianapolis Recorder newspaper, and he called it Just Telling It, and he did. He wasn't afraid to describe how he felt about an issue, identify the issue, and tell you what he thought about it. And that often worked because you would see people act upon the things that he brought up in the column. And so, you know, that's how I remember him.
Yeah, ditto. A friend, a colleague. I was fortunate enough to be on his show several times over the years. And normally I'm the one asking questions, and it can be off-putting when somebody else is asking, but he had a way.
Had the experience I did. A lot of people were afraid of Amos and afraid of the questions he might ask. But if you were in his studio, nobody was nicer.
Oh, yeah, because he wanted you to come back.
That's the point. There is nobody more of a gentleman.
And he was also an expert on something he doesn't get a lot of credit for, and that was the census. The census every 10 years was a big deal to him.
It's true. Finally, IKEA is coming to Indiana with plans for a store opening in Fishers in 2017. Here's Purdue professor Richard Feinberg.
You take the average IKEA store that makes $90 million on average and multiply that by the 7% sales tax. That's a considerable amount of revenue for Indiana.
He's talking about a giant store that will have 1,000 parking spots and employ 250 people. It's a $40 million investment with no tax incentives included in the deal. And Delaney, will IKEA improve the quality of life in Central Indiana?
I don't know if it'll improve the quality of life, but I mean, I think it's an indication that the Central Indiana market is growing and vibrant, and that you're getting national chains to want to establish a foothold here. And you know, with the Democratic mayor now, the sky's the limit. It seems
and
to me.
And Fishers?
I'm talking about Indianapolis.
Well, where's it going to be located?
Well, it's located in Fishers, but they want customers rising, from Central
Republican
Indiana.
Republican rising stars. Yeah. Mayor Fisher, Scott.
You think
Badd
they picked Fishers because they got a Republican mayor?
Why wouldn't they?
I think they picked it because they had an interstate.
I think
there.
A lot of people choose Indiana because of Republican policies.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, usually it's because Mike Pence hands out things to them when they need
them. Why are people so excited about IKEA? Is maybe a better question. Is it the meatballs?
The meatballs, I know, are a draw.
Is it ABBA?
I remember going to many road-away soccer games with kids playing travel soccer, and half the parents would be in the stands cheering on their kids, and the others were somewhere else, and it usually was at an IKEA store, so the allure is pretty significant.
All right. Well, what's it going to do to the traffic in Fishers?
It's going to be interesting. They'll have to work through it, that's for sure.
So is that why we're spending $85 million on expanding 69
Indiana
up there?
That's Indiana Week in review for this week. Panelist Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Robert Vane, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.